water, earth, fire, air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar, and although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. After concluding our coverage of Avatar, The Last Airbender, we decided, why not double up? Go ahead and continue exploring the world of bending by covering the comics and now following the journey of Avatar Korra as she navigates the post-war world.
Last week, we wrapped up Book 2, Spirits, of Korra with the defeat of Unalaq and Batu, and watched as Korra began a new era for both the physical and spirit worlds. This week, we start on an adventure that will take us back through the walls of Ba Sing Se.
Long way to Ba Sing Se.
And beyond, as we cover episodes 1 through 3 of Book 3, Change.
As we enter this new era, right, in Republic City, there's no better way to kick it off than with awkward exchanges between you and both your exes and avoiding family trips, sleeping under your office desk, and using official titles when addressing the person you used to date. But one thing that we can't avoid is this adult content. Get in your life. Kin Folklore will have it so that we can avoid those horrifically harsh exit polls in Republic City.
Episode 1, A Breath of Fresh Air. Just 2 weeks after Korra's battle with Unavatu, Bumi is chasing his spirit friend, Boomju, around Air Temple Island when he almost falls off a cliff and accidentally airbends?
Yeah! I love it. You love to see it all. I was like, oh my God, Boomy's going to fall to his death in the beginning of a season. And then he's like, bending. Oh yeah, wow, look at that. It's amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool. Korra, Tenzin, and Janora are doing a walkthrough of the part of the city that is still covered in vines. These are the vines that Unavatu sent through the city when, you know, he basically was trying to take over the physical world. Janora doesn't quite understand why Korra would want to get rid of the vines, since they're now part of the spirit wilds. But, you know, people used to live there, so...
Yeah, I mean, I get it. It's like having, like, shrubs too close to your property that are, like, overtaking your whole property. But at the same time, I see what she's saying, too. If we're trying to build this, like, bridge between humans and the spirit world, maybe there's a way that we can, like, you know, update the architecture around here a little bit, you know?
Sure, but people are homeless. Like, okay. My girl lives in a temple on a private island. So
you're saying Janora, your privilege is showing here.
Right. Like, right. Like, people want to access their city.
Oh God, it's so good.
So at a press conference, President Raiko throws Korra under the bus. about the vines, about the new era, about everything. And Korra is about to let him have it when Lynn steps in and abruptly ends a press conference.
She cut that press conference short. And my girl Korra is in need of Joey Lucas and Josh Lyman, okay?
Or Olivia Pope. She needs somebody.
She needs somebody because 8% approval rating is damn.
It's pretty low.
92% of the city is out on you? Wow.
I mean, again, their houses have been taken over by vines. So
I'm with you, but I do believe that my homie from West Wing, Joey Lucas, she could figure out a way to get the polls to swing in the right direction, to ask the right questions. Maybe they're not asking the right questions on these polls.
I think this one's pretty simple. It's, do you approve of Avatar Korra? Yes or no?
Oh my gosh. Great.
So back on Air Temporal Island, Bumi is trying to tell everyone that he's now an airbender, but they basically ignore him. Bolin has been staying with the family, but Mako has decided that he needs to stay at the police station. Why is this allowed?
Full on hobo vibe.
Full
on just like, nah, I'm going to avoid having to deal with being like in that close to Korra. Like, you know, he's doing too much, man. He's doing too much.
Always. At dinner, Milo throws a plate towards Bomi, and he's able to airbend to stop it briefly, and the family is completely shocked.
The faces are amazing. Everyone's eyes and their mouths are drooping. They're like, yo, what is happening in front of us right now? It's amazing.
Mako gets a phone call in the middle of the night at the police station from a shopkeeper who argued with his brother, who now is also exhibiting powers like airbending. The next day, as the family watches Bumi attempt to airbend, nothing is happening. they're watching him make a fool of himself, basically. Tenzin and Korra wonder if the reason that he has these new abilities is because of his time spent in the spirit world. But then Lin and Mako arrive and tell them about the shopkeeper's brother. Mm-hmm. And Korra offers to help. But Mako refuses, saying it's official police business and she's Avatar.
Yeah. No, you probably should just leave it to the police because, like, it's like stuff, it's official and, you know, it would be better. I mean, you could, but maybe not. And all right, so long, you know, over and out. Like, better, like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
It's terrible. He's really awkward. While teaching Korra to drive, Asami confesses that while Korra was away, she kissed Mako. And Korra confesses that she kissed him while he and Asami were together. And there's like a beat where you think this is going to turn into something. And it doesn't, because they're better than this. And they just laugh.
They're like fine with this. They're like, yeah, Mako. And then they both go, oh, no wonder. The Korra's like, no wonder he's acting so weird around both of us. Like, no wonder. This makes total sense now. They're like totally chill with it. And I just love this scene. Like, I love their relationship that's blossoming. And I love that, like, she's like, you got to learn to drive. You're the freaking Avatar. And then Korra totally flubbing this shit, like being terrible at this shit to everything, to the old man creeping around, beeping the horn, New York City style. Like, what are you doing? Get out the road. It's fucking great.
Can I just take this moment?
Yeah.
And celebrate the end of the love triangle.
Oh.
It's over. That's it.
Yes.
No more Korra, Asami, Mako drama. I've been waiting for this for a long time.
It was like everything you hated about Twilight all wrapped into, you know, it was like all of that all together. Like, all the, like, you know, are you team Zuko and team Aang? Are you team Mako? It was just too much.
I can't. I'm so glad it's over. And, you know, I wish the love triangle had been with General Iroh, but, you know, whatever.
Like, put some leaves from the vine in your tea. Toss a coin for your witcher. Do whatever you need to do. It has come to a close, okay?
That's it. Done. Thank God. So, as they're driving, Korra has to swerve to avoid hitting a vine, one that I don't think was there previously the day. Yeah. So the vines are on the move. And she gets into an argument with a spirit who tells her that spirits and vines are all the same. She should know that as the Avatar. And that inspires an idea.
You ought to know that, Avatar. Sorry.
These spirits are really rude and out of order.
They are really out of order.
Can they just like address people kindly? Like, is that asking too much? So rude. Korra begins to work on her plan to eliminate the vines, which is basically she's going to waterbend them. I guess it's she starts waterbending and then she energy bends. Is that what she's doing?
I mean, she does both. I think it's both. It's kind of one of those things, again, that's not really explained why this epiphany. I guess of what she's basically saying is like the elements and the spirit world are so linked that she should be able to like make this go away and use it by bending water. She bends it into it, the vines into the water, right? So that's I guess she's using water bending more than anything.
Well, she's using the same type of bending that Unalaq used to calm down spirits.
Yep.
So, you know, I think there's a combination between like spirit bending going on here and water bending. Anyway, Raiko shows up. He brings the press with him because that's the type of guy he is.
God, he's so terrible. Like, I can't wait till election year. I just can't. Let's vote this guy out of here.
And she thinks that she solved the problem, but she hasn't. Because even though it seems like the vines disappeared, they come back really quickly. And they sprout and take down a nearby apartment building. Korra is able to save all of the residents, but the apartment building is basically destroyed. Mm-hmm. Later, you know, feeling frustrated, Korra tries to reach the previous avatars by meditating, but she still can't. That link is still broken. Tenzin reminds her about her responsibility. It's not to solve the everyday problems of citizens of Republic City, but to bring balance to the world. And he tells her, true wisdom begins when we accept things as they are. So basically,
but he does all that after he shades her, like, man, you must really be having a hard time because you hate meditating. What is wrong with him? Like, yo, I love this. This is hilarious, actually.
But he basically is telling her to stop worrying about the vines, which again, tough takes coming out of the folks who live on a private island.
Yeah, I mean, but a private island in which was founded by the old Avatar because he saved the city from destruction and ruin. So he kind of earned his island.
Let me see the tax bills.
There is the tax bill. All right, I'm with you. I hear where you're going with this. I see it. I see what you're saying.
They live like a very simple life, but like they have their own property. They have guards from the White Lotus there. You know, since Korra is there, they have a privileged lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, they do. But it's like what he's saying is like, don't stress out. Like, you're going to figure it out. He's not really telling her. I mean, he knows she's going to figure something out. Huh?
I don't know if he's talking about the vines. I think he's like, look at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so Bolin interrupts this little chat to say that a new airbender, which is the shopkeeper's brother, his name is Daw, has gone to Kyoshi Bridge and is refusing to come down. He's climbed up on top of the bridge. The metal bending police attempt to save him, but he basically airbends them away accidentally, which I felt so bad for him because he's like, I came up this bridge to get away from people and I've just assaulted the police now.
So he's like, be careful. I don't know what I'm doing. Also, side note, now we can add to the list of people who have monuments and landmarks named after them, Kyoshi, and Katara still does not have one. But I just want to move on.
I'm sensing some resentment.
I mean, I'm just saying, I love Kyoshi, but I'm like, Kyoshi did not help them settle this place or fix the conflict in the Earth Nation colonies or the Fire Nation colonies. So I just don't understand. Like, I'm like, why is this Kyoshi Bridge and not Katara Bridge?
I don't have a response for that. I agree. Katara's been erased from the narrative.
Go ahead, continue. I'm just gonna point this out for our fandom every chance I get because I love Katara so much. She's one of my favorites.
She's also one of mine. I hear you. Yeah. So Korra flies up to talk to Daw, but he slips and falls, and she has to save him. And then she's able to introduce him to Tenzin, so he's connected to, you know, basically the only other airbenders.
Really cool.
Raiko confronts Korra and tells her to get out of the city. I mean, he's rude. This guy is awful. And Korra basically says fine, because her new mission is to help find all of the new airbenders and rebuild the air nomad nation. And Tenzin, who's been talking about this with his kids, volunteers to go with her. In the next scene, somewhere in the mountains, a guard of the White Lotus brings provisions to a prisoner. The prisoner, Zaheer, tells the guard, you know, about Guru Lahima, and then bends himself out of the prison. The guards are extremely surprised because the prisoner was not a bender before, but now he too is an airbender. As he escapes, he tells them that in 3 weeks there will be another shift, so, you know, they just have to stay there for 3 weeks. Marking the end, his escape is marking the end of the White Lotus and the end of the Avatar. Big words. Everybody wants to end the Avatar. Can somebody get some other criminal plans under everybody's? You're all too focused on the Avatar.
After I saw this, I just literally after Zaheer says this, I say to myself, poor Korra, man. Like, it's 2 weeks after saving the world from a fucking harmonic convergence meltdown where you had Unavatu about to blow things up, and now you got someone who you don't even know exists. Like, yo, I'm gonna end the White Lotus and I'm gonna end the Avatar. I will say this, one of the most epic entrances in Avatar, Zaheer's entrance.
Yeah.
Like, I love
it. He's the scary dude. Like, when he left, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be a formidable opponent for Korra.
Yeah, I like this guy. I don't like him, but I like the entrance. Let me rephrase that. I like the entrance. The entrance was good. And there's, you know, there's mixed reviews about his. Again, he's a complicated character. As we get into it, we're gonna talk about that more, too. The next episode begins by Asami bringing an airship to Air Temple Island. Mako brings a map of the reports of new airbenders all over the Earth Kingdom. And, you know, here you go, Avatar Korra. And, you know, and he's awkward again. Like, she's like, thank you very much for following your orders. Like, kind of making fun of him. And she's like, say, why don't you come with us? But Mako refuses. So Bolin convinces him, like, come on, man. Like, what if we're going to where our dad was born? Their dad, now we find out, was from Ba Sing Se. And he says, like, what if I run into grandma and she's like, where's, like, you know, my grandson? And you're like, well, he had some important police business that he had to handle and paperwork. Like, it'd be lame, wouldn't it? So come with us. And Mako comes. He's like, okay, he just needed a little push. And he complains, even in his relenting, he complains about having to tell Beifong because, you know, he had to brood about something.
Can I just say that Bolin is very good at emotional manipulation?
He really is.
He really, I mean, he got Eska to relent after Eska literally said in a couple of episodes, like the previous episode, I would never betray my father.
Yeah.
A little tears from her boo-boo. And she's out here freeing him, helping them defeat her father. Like, I mean, come on, he's good. He gets Mako, who's like, I do not want to be on an airship with my two ex-girlfriends.
Yeah
pulls the family card. He gets him to come. It's good. He's really Mako. I mean, Bolin is good at emotional manipulation.
100%. And Mako needs to get over himself, right? Like, you struck out on both accounts, right? You first of all, Asami was like really into you and you decided you were going to play her to try to go date Korra. You and Korra are not a match. We all knew that jumping in. You break up with Korra and then you kind of leave Asami on red again. So now, yeah, you got to take this medicine, bro. You got to go on this airship and just eat this one. You know, like, eat it.
I agree. 100%.
That's it. You got to just eat that one. It's nobody else's fault but your own. So, however, there are two other people who are not so happy with this development. That would be Iki and Milo. They're upset. In fact, they are letting everyone know that they should not be left behind while Janora is allowed to go on the trip. Kaya, pulling her best Katara, let me reframe this for you conversation, says, hey, you know what? You guys are staying behind because you have an important mission. You're going to have to be teachers. There's going to be other airbenders who may show up to the air temple, and you guys have to be here, to which they're both ecstatic. Iki's like, I'm a teacher. Milo's like, bow down to me. This, and, you know, again, scaring us about his lust for power.
Milo could very well be a supervillain. Like, yeah. He's definitely toast. Like, he's really close to that line.
Yeah, I love him, but it's like we gotta work on this guy. Even Tenzin's like, go easy on them, son. Like, easy, calm down. Somewhere at sea, at another White Lotus prison, a boat pull up, and the boat pull up has Zaheer inside said boat, and he washes all these guards. And the worst part is that the guard has a moment of recognition when he's like, where are all the other guards? Zaheer! And he gets washed. Like, it is wild. So
I can't wait to discuss the White Lotus at the end of this episode.
Oh, I've had so much commentary since season one of Korra. This is the White Lotus. Man, how far they have fallen since the days of Iroh and Bumi.
These guys freed Ba Sing Se from the Fire Nation. It's Look crazy. At this mess.
What is happening? Oh, mess. My goodness. So, Zaheer basically is freeing a lone prisoner. His name is Ghazan. When the two reunite, Zaheer tells Ghazan that he was gifted the ability of airbending during the harmonic convergence and believes that it is because their path is a righteous one.
Okay, do they give them newspapers? Like, I'm confused. So there's a guard shift every 3 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since a harmonic convergence. How does he know there was a harmonic convergence? Like,
I mean, we'll find out later that Zaheer is very, very tapped in to the spirit world things. So it could very well be the spirit realm, the spirit world that he's meditating when we meet him.
That's
so
true.
He's
yeah,
very
that's
tapped
fair.
In.
Yeah. That's fair.
You know, so could be that. But yeah, the newspaper part is the update on the news is pretty wild. You know what I mean? So he is up to date. Maybe they got CNN. Who knows? iPhones. So Team Avatar now arrives in a village in the Earth Kingdom. A local farmer named Quan is excited to be an airbender, but refuses to adapt the air nomad culture. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm not leaving my family and my farm and everything I know just because I got some airbending ability. Y'all came here to recruit me, to take me to become a nomad and live like a nomad on an island? Nah, you're tripping. I got a life here.
The fact that they didn't anticipate that there would be resistance is crazy to me. You're asking people to leave everything they've ever known to come live an entirely different lifestyle, and they're just doing it like assuming that everybody would be down with this. It's really
but you hit on it earlier because you're talking about the way that they have blind spots around the suffering of the people based on the spiritual awakening, about the different things that are happening based on the way that they live versus the way other people live. So for them, they've been the only airbenders and have almost held it in themselves as like, you know, we're special. And think about it. He even has to have a talk with the kids that it means that we're not going to be the only airbenders anymore. We'll have to get used to it. Meaning we have to get used to the idea that we're not this elite family that's special and that other people are going to have the same ability. And that shows up in their approach to like how they come and try to recruit them.
Yeah. We'll talk more about the fact that Korra and company are not very worldly later. Like, why would anyone want to do this?
Oh my gosh. So that rejection is the first of many. As they go around the Earth Kingdom, no one seems to want to join them. First of all, their pitch is pretty boring. They're not offering any incentives. There's no relocation package. There's nothing. It's just like, hey, you're an airbender. Come roll with us.
Right. So, and you have to be a vegetarian. There's so many. I couldn't do it. I would be like, I'm good.
Yeah. So Korra decides it's time for some tough love. It's time to let people know that they're going to do this. And they arrive at the home of what one can only say is a very modern day 22-year-old. This guy's living in his parents' basement. Got no job. Got no prospects. His mother is very eager for him to go from the home. She wants him. She's like, please. But Raya was very broody.
I'm hearing like a little parental resentment.
What, in me?
Yes.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying anything about. I'm just saying that when you look at this situation, this is like, you know, this is a serious failure to launch situation that's happening with Ryu. And his mom is like, yo, this is a good experience. You can get out there, see the world, enjoy it. She's pushing him out the door. But and he's like, nah, I mean, I don't want to go. And Korra's like, no tolerance for this listless, shiftless, lazy. I mean, I know what's going on with this kid. All right? Sorry, the Pachua came out a little bit. And I don't understand what is happening. And Mako and Bolin are a little bit mortified by how upset Korra is. But I feel her on a very visceral level. They literally have to pull up at it because she's like, nah, let me snatch you up. Your mom been too soft on you. You living here with no job, bro. Like, I'm offering you an opportunity. So they take her up out of there. Ryan does not go. Mom is very frustrated because yet again, he will be kicking it. Korra's even like, you do have to go. No, you don't. I do have to do my job as an avatar. No, you don't. I do. No, you don't. It's crazy.
I just want to know, does he pay rent there? Does he contribute to the household finances? Like, what is just saying?
I seriously doubt it. I mean, she was looking for this to happen. There's a point where they're dragging Korra out and she's dragging the boy and the mom is pushing him out the door like, go! Please! Oh, man. In yet another prison, a woman is being held in a volcano. Thanks to the help of Zahir and Gazan. That sounds like a weird like law firm. Zahir and Gazan. Fight your small. Have you been hit by a car? Are you stuck inside a volcano? Zahir and Gazan will take up your claim. She's able to waterbend her way out. Her name is Minghua. And she's got like water for arms, which is super dope. She has like no arms, but she's using her arms are actually streams of water.
Yeah, it's really cool. I was just okay, now I'm paying attention. Before I was like, this one air bends, we've seen that before. this one earth bends, we've seen that. Now I'm like, oh wow, this woman, her arms are water. Like,
well, Gazan is really interesting because he does a combination of the fire and earth bending, like lava bending is what which is super dope. Like, I'm like, whoa, he's like combining both, which is, and these advanced benders, like this is like almost like we're seeing like an evil team avatar be formed. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's almost like a mirror image of the normal team avatar. They got basically somebody from almost every element.
Mm-hmm.
So back on the airship, Team Avatar, you know, they need a pep talk. They feel a little deflated. Bumi and Bolin suggest that they add a bit more enthusiasm, a little glitz, a little pizzazz to their presentation. Bumi just wanted to put some glitter on Tenzin's outfit. He was like, let's put some sparkly shit on him, roll him around, throw him out there. But Bolin has learned something. With his time with Varric and the Movers, he's like, no, we need to put on a show. Invite these people into something exciting. So they put on a bit of a show with Tenzin demonstrating his ability. Mako pretends to be an escaped convict, and Korra airbends him up in the air and laughs with Asami as he's spinning around. This is what we rehearsed. He's so stuck in that she's messing with him. And Jinora shows off flying with her air glider, landing perfectly. She's young, but she's got it all under control. And after the demonstration, a young boy runs up and he wants to join them. This young boy's name is Kai. He's very eager to leave with them. He's like, when do we leave? How do we get on a ship? I want to go. Gotta get out of here. Let's roll. You would think that some alarms would start going off for everybody. But no, everybody's like, oh, wow, we got one. We got a recruit. He tells him that he's an orphan. He gives him this really sad story. Bolin takes him in right away. I'm going to be your big bro. A year ago, he tells him his town was raided by outlaws. And his parents fought them and saved them and saved the rest of the village. But they died. He says he's on the run because outlaws are still after him. So they say, man, let's take this kid in. So they take him in. As soon as they board, men show up.
Wait. Don't forget the most important part. Someone makes eyes at him when they're boarding.
Oh, well, you know, I was gonna get there. But, you know, Jinora, yeah, she's got a little, she's like, oh, wait, Kai's kind of cute.
Yeah, she's definitely developing a little crush there.
No question. No question about it. You see it. You see it right away. And as soon as they board, men show up and ask them to release Kai. Korra jumps out as normal Korra vibes. You know the vibes. She jumps out. Just no questions asked. She's gonna, you want Kai, you gotta go through me. And discovers that actually they're not outlaws. They're the local sheriff.
They're wearing uniforms. Like, yes. What is she doing?
She's not paying attention. They're wearing uniforms. She's doing Korra. Korra gonna Korra. You know what I mean? Like, this is what she's doing, right? She asking no questions. She kick ass first and ask questions later. But she does. And Mako brings Kai by the scruff of his neck. Like, I caught him sneaking off. He's got a bag of gold and jewels. And the sheriff tells him, you've been fooled. Kai is actually an orphan. That was true. But he was adopted by a family. And how he, you know, basically repaid them was stealing this bag of jewels from their house. Basically ran off with their savings. And Korra tells the sheriff that, why don't you go in and take the gold? You got the gold back. Take it to the family, but leave Kai with them. I was a little bit flabbergasted at this. Although, I am happy that Kai's getting another shot. Because, yeah. I mean, I'm going to keep it 1,000. There ain't many black people in the Four Nations. This little black boy with twisties on the top of his head, it got no home, got no family. I was like, dang, I'm happy to see it. You love to see him getting a shot. So I'm happy for Kai.
Also, how is Kai that different from Mako or Bolin before Korra met them? You know,
not like, really.
They were criminals as well. They had, exactly. You know, they used their wits to get by. He's not that different from them. Mako doesn't care because he's the police now. But everybody else.
Mako went from like gang member. To like the other side of it, he's super enforcer police guy all the time now. He's like super police orientated. It's really weird. It's very strange.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange, but I can understand. Like, I think Mako feels kind of guilty about that time that they spent with the triad, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think Bolin feels the same way because mm-mm. Bolin obviously was willing to take a triad job when he needed some money.
Bolin's like, I'm going to get this money.
But I think Mako doesn't feel great about the fact that they had to do crime to get by. And so now he's kind of overcompensating, which I get, but I'm, you know, he doesn't have, I think he sees himself in Kai, but he, not in a good way. Like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I know you, kid. I've been you.
Yep. And he says that. He literally says that. And I think that it's actually good for Team Avatar to have Mako along on this journey, because I think it's going to help Kai. Because if they were just those guys would be so naive and just think, oh, Kai's a good kid. He's going to be like, they have a lot of blind spots where Mako sees Kai where he's at in his development right now. And the only thing I would say for Mako is he doesn't see the good. Like, they see all good. Mako sees all bad. So they're not balancing this. And I think that, you know, Mako eventually should, I mean, there's an old saying, if you spot it, you got it. So he's probably seeing, like you said, the negative parts of himself inside this kid.
Like, yeah, the parts that he tries to, like, suppress and that he's ashamed of, he sees in Kai. And I think what Bolin sees in Kai is a kid who's trying to get by with his wits, right? And and the skills that he has. So I think both brothers see themselves in Kai. They just are coming at it from a different angle.
I love that they're doing that, because it's giving them, and I love this. This is giving Bolin and Mako something as we keep progressing down this story, that another aspect of their story, which is good. And they need something. They need some things to do.
Yeah, I think Mako is one of the more underdeveloped characters, so it's nice to see him, you know, his feelings about his, you know, Bolin, Asami, Korra, and Kai all kind of come out.
100%. 100%. So in the final scene of this episode, a White Lotus guard is telling the one, the only, long hair, don't care, got a beard and a scar, Zuko. He's telling Zuko about the prison break.
It's good to see him. It's really good to see him. I didn't realize how much I missed him until he was on screen.
Wonderful. And it was great to see, like, I was like, wow, this is old, you know, older Zuko, like elder Zuko, like looking a bit like, we know it's him, but looking a bit like Roku, you know what I mean? Like, has a little Roku vibe to him. It was cool. It was really cool to see him like that. And Zuko takes this prison break very seriously. He tells the guards he knows where they're heading, that there's no reason for them to go searching, but to inform Lin Beifong so she can protect the Avatar and the new chiefs of the Northern Water Tribe. He then gets on the back of his dragon.
Yeah, I lost it when I first saw this. I was like, what? Talk about Roku vibes.
Yes.
Zuko has a dragon. Avatar Studios, if you are listening to this, please, I need the origin story of Zuko and his dragon.
Yes.
That is, so, I will take a short. It doesn't even need to be a full episode or a movie. I will take 10 minutes. Explain this to me. It's so dope.
And he flies off to go and stop them. I have headcanon, like, that a friend of ours and we have spoken about, that I'll talk about at the end of the episode of what I think. But, you know, let's go. Let's see what happens. About the origin story. Let's see what happens. Love it. Let's see what they do.
Love it. Episode 3, The Earth Queen. This is, I'm giving my, like, eye roll emoji.
Boo, Earth Queen.
Not
boo. The whole dynasty. We're going to talk about the Earth Kingdom royalty and their whole line.
Just let them go. All of them. Ugh. Anyway. So on the airship, Bumi and Kai are sparring. You know, they're learning a little airbending. Kai is advanced and easily knocks Bumi on his ass.
That's really good, Kai. Oh, thanks. I have a good teacher. Blush emoji. Blush. Oh my god.
Janora.
This Janora Kai.
If I were Tenzin, I would already be splitting the two of them up.
He was out there on the airship on the deck, and he's all like, Janora, we've got to go. Like, he's like, get over here.
This is not the type of young man you want your impressionable, young, spirit connected, loving, naive daughter to be attached to.
Yeah.
So as they approach Ba Sing Se, Bolin is excited with anticipation. This is where their father grew up.
Yeah.
Mako seems a little bit, you know, he's trying to brood a little bit, but Bolin is hyped. Team Avatar sees some of the same inequities that the OG Team Avatar saw more than 70 years ago. The outer ring is very poor and dilapidated. And is it
almost worse? It's worse than what it used to be, and it's so bad that the smells.
Yeah. I mean, Toph had mentioned something about the smell, so the smell was always there, but it does seem to have gotten worse. As they get closer to the upper ring, the surroundings become much nicer. When they land in the upper ring, they're greeted by the Grand Secretariat Gunn, who tells them that the Earth Queen is not going to abide by Pabu, Naga, and Ugi. She does not like animals. She hates them.
Already on my list, that you're that out on like three of the cutest animals you'll ever come across in the Four Nations.
And how can you not like Pabu? Like, yeah. I don't understand. Pabu was so cute.
It's crazy.
This would be like not liking Momo. How can you not like Momo?
It doesn't make any sense.
So she has like all these rules. There's so much protocol. You can't look her in the eyes. You can't really eat in her presence. Grand Secretariat Gunn basically begs them not to upset the Earth Queen.
Because he's going to be the one that has to deal with the fallout. Like, he literally says, because anytime she gets upset, like, I end up having to deal with it and she takes it out on me. So please, please don't upset the Earth Queen. Like, he's literally like pleading with them. He's like giving them game. Like, yo, please help me out.
Yeah. This guy is stressed out. As the others settle into their quarters, Korra is presented to the queen, who, as Korra approaches, is yelling at the gardeners about some bushes. I mean, she's just going off. But she also has some legitimate grievances.
They, though? You really think they're legitimate?
I do. So she basically says that Avatar Aang and Zuko took land from the Earth Kingdom to create the United Republic.
But they didn't really take land. Like, her dad agreed to it. He was involved in all those conversations.
She does blame her dad. She says her dad was weak and he shouldn't have let them do it. I don't agree with her. I think that we covered the comics. Like, we know why they did what they did. But I do think that from her point of view, she lost territory.
Because she's greedy. I mean, and we find that out later. She's hella greedy. I mean, like, really, and the Law of Secession should have went to Bosco. Okay? Like, this is whack.
Oh, Bosco. Yeah. So she's also having trouble with bandits in the kingdom and collecting taxes from some of her subjects. Korra's sympathetic to that part, but not really sure what she can do. But she agrees to help collect the tax money. Meanwhile, back at the house, the others have noticed that Kai is missing. Mako and Bolin go to look for him and see him using airbending to rob a local man. They chase him through the city, but he escapes. He jumps on the train heading towards the lower ring, and then he jumps off. And they're stuck on the train. And Mako and Bolin get stuck on the train but have no money to buy a return ticket because Kai took their money.
Got robbed, Bolin. That's it, you know? Golly, I can't even believe it. And it's like epic because the door closes and he's like waving to them like, peace, as they scoot away. Yeah.
These guys. So they basically sleep on the street. The next morning, they contemplate robbing a fruit stand. And this gives way to one of the most hilarious exchanges probably in a while, which is basically like, Mako's like, ew, I don't want to eat these nasty fruits because, you know, he's come up in the world.
Yeah.
And the merchant hears them and is like, wait, are you trying to steal from me? And he's like, ew, no, I don't want your nasty fruits. And he's like, wait, you're saying my fruits aren't good enough? And they go back and forth like this for a while.
I mean, do you want me to steal it? I mean, is that what you're saying? I knew you were trying to steal it.
The merchant calls for his father, and it turns out that father is Mako and Bolin's uncle. They have found their Earth Kingdom family.
Wow.
He takes them to see their family, and they're embraced immediately, especially by Yin, their grandmother, which at this point I was already dabbing my eyes. Like, she's so cute. Like,
that we just found out that Bolin is very connected to his spiritual side too. He's a psychic. He did say, what if I go there and we run into grandma and she asked like where it is? like he knew the whole thing was gonna happen. I'm impressed. We're gonna call him Bolin Cleo Earthbender guy. Call me now.
So none of the family knew that Mako and Bolin's parents were killed when they were little. They thought that they were living it up in Republic City all this time. Yeah. So this is a really nice reunion, but it's also shocking to that they've been separated from their family. They had all this family and they never knew it. Mm-hmm. And their family never knew that they needed them. It's really sad to think about.
100%.
At the Northern Water Tribe, Zuko, Tonrock, and Tonrock go to see the new chiefs, Eska and Desna.
What? That's the come up. It's the come up. They took the throne.
And they're ruling together. It's perfect. I love it. I love it. I don't know if they're very good rulers because they seem quite bored. But
I mean, they're bored and they didn't even know a big feature of their kingdom. They're informed by Zuko about its existence. So that's pretty wild within itself.
So they're super excited about a mission to go check on the secret prison, which is hidden in the tundra. At the secret,
how come we didn't know anything about this prison?
Oh my gosh, these two. I love it. I love this exchange so much. So as they're descending to the secret prison, Zuko tells Eska and Desna that the woman being held in the prison is named Pylee, and that she's similar to Combustion Man, a.k.a. Sparky Boom Man.
Sparky Boom Man.
Who... he once hired to kill the Avatar.
Don't awkward. Feel bad. I tried to kill Korra when she broke up my wedding.
Can we just note that Korra's father is standing behind them? Yes. He's legit in this elevator with them while Zuko is confessing to trying to kill the Avatar with an assassin. Mm. And Eska is saying, yeah, she tried to kill her cousin. Like, it's...
Oh, God, it's so good. And it was just this awkward silence, too, of just like, yeah, ironically, it's similar to a person I hired to kill the Avatar. And they're like, huh? That's what's great. So great.
So Korra and Asami head to one of the Earth Kingdom villages to pick up the tax shipment. And they are ambushed by bandits on motorcycles. The two of them just basically kick ass here. I mean, it's wild impressive. Asami is a really good fighter. We know Korra is an incredible bender. And the bandits end up retreating. But they tell Korra as they're going that she's on the wrong side of this fight. And Korra's like, I think you might be right. She's not feeling great about this mission.
I agree. I don't want to go too fast past the fight scene, because this is one of the better fight scenes in the whole series. And I love Asami in this scene. I love Asami in this scene, and I love that Korra, for the first, like, you see Korra save Asami, like be protective over Asami in this scene in a way that was interesting, like, in the beginning. And then Asami being like, well, I really, because she puts up that wall to make sure that the bite can't go into her. And then Asami just takes it from there. Like, she goes to work in this scene. You know?
Yeah, and they work really well together. There's a certain amount, the way that, like, Mako and Bolin work together with their different elements.
Mm-hmm.
You see Korra and Asami kind of work in tandem with their their various skills. It reminded me a little bit of, you know, Mei and Ty Lee and Azula. Because Azula was really good at using Mei and Ty Lee's skill, not, you know, non-bending, but very adept fighting skills to build on that and use her bending. So it was really cool. I love this scene. So back in Ba Sing Se, Mako and Bolin learned that their father left because he wanted to see the world. He had a terrible fight with his father, who wanted him to take over the fruit stand. And their grandmother shows them the only letter and picture she's ever received from her son's son. In the picture, he's wearing Mako's scarf. And Mako decides to give the scarf to his grandmother so that she can have a memento of her son.
Really cool.
Korra gives over the tax money to the Earth Queen, and the Queen tells her there are no airbenders in Ba Sing Se.
I mean, this is crazy, right? Like, this is like shades of what we've already seen. There's no war in Ba Sing Se. There are no airbenders in Ba Sing Se. They love a denial and a secret plot in Ba Sing Se.
They really do. And we'll talk a little bit about the Dai Li in a moment, but. She tells Korra to get out of the city. This is why can the Avatar never get like a nice reception in Ba Sing Se?
I mean, because they're with that fuck shit and they know the Avatar is not going to stand for it. That's why.
When Mako and Bolin tell their family that they're there to help the Avatar find airbenders, they're told that the Dai Li have been snatching up all the airbenders once their powers manifest and making them disappear. Meanwhile, Kai is running around the city using airbending to steal from people and, you know, cue the creepy Dai Li music. He's caught by the Dai Li. They throw him into a cell and tell him that he's been conscripted to Her Majesty's military. For now on, you live to fight for the Earth Queen. And that's how the episode ends.
Yeah, I mean, golly, man. That's all I can say. It's just,
why? 70 years, no real reform. Just like the same mess.
I mean, the one thing she got right is her dad was a weak leader. Like, no question. You know what I mean? Like, there's no question about it. Because he just let the city continue on like that and then handed it over to her to continue the same level of neglect, oppression, and taxation policies that are like killing the people of the city so that other people can live high on the hog. And it's just not cool. Like, there's no part of it that makes you feel like, oh yeah, this is like the way that a kingdom should be run. And just the Earth Kingdom in general is just, golly, man. Like, I mean, the Ba Sing Se has a lot of governmental problems. Like, no question.
Let's just note that when Azula took over Ba Sing Se, that the Earth King got on Bosco's back and went and traveled the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than liberate his people, he decided that it was a good time for him to embrace the nomad life and go see the world. I mean, in fairness, he'd never left the city, but still, I was just like, okay, I mean, you could sit here and help the Avatar win your city back, but no, go on vacation. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Oh, these Earth kings and queens, this whole dynasty is a mess. They need to go. Yeah,
it is. There's no question about it. We need reform. We need a reform in Ba Sing Se. It's not a good look.
It's really terrible. It's such a depressing city, and the inequities make me sick. But the fact that the queen is such a tyrant, and also, you know how I feel about the Dai Li. What is going on? Okay, what is actually going on with the Dai Li? Why were they allowed to come back? Why are they still in existence? Defund the Dai Li.
Yeah, they definitely turned on the whole city, betrayed the king and their people, and now they're back as the defending force. It makes no sense.
They shouldn't exist. The Dai Li should not exist. This is not cool. I'm really not down with it. I hate their creepy music. I hate that they exist. I wasn't even in on Kai, and now I'm worried about him. They're always making me worry about characters I don't like, which is like Jet and Kai.
I
mean,
I'm very worried about Kai. I think Kai was misguided, but he's inside. He's like a roughneck kid that's got a heart of gold, right? Like, he's one of those kids. He's gonna be just fine. And it's just like, I don't know, man. I mean, the only thing I like about the Dai Li is that they were created by Avatar Kaioshi, but that day has passed. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I like about them.
So I'm concerned about Kai's intentions on Jinora. So that's
why. So you're okay with them going to jail? You want him
to
like?
No, I'm not. But that's why I'm kind of out on him, because I don't trust this kid. And if he hurts Jinora, I'm going to, like, everybody's going to die. Like, yeah, that's the type of thing that would set me off. Janora.
Better not. Janora, that's my
so
girl.
So great. Yeah. I'm concerned about his intentions. But, you know, other than that, I agree with you. I think he just needs a second chance. I like that Team Avatar has taken him under their wing. I think that's good. But I just don't. I'm not sold on Kai yet. But now the Dai Li has me stressed about him. See, this is what I don't like. It's like when they captured Jet, I was out on Jet. But then they captured him, and now I got to worry about him.
And then he died, I think.
Well, maybe. Don't know. Did he?
Who knows? I mean, hard to tell. Really hard. Really hard to tell.
It's not clear.
Not clear. Not clear at all. My question. I mean, the other thing that really pops out to me was that. I mean, were those just residents, or was that the Dao Fei that's going for that money? And I don't know yet. Though the Dao Fei being like gangs in the Earth Kingdom that were notorious, I was very interested in knowing whether that was, you know, whether these guys were Dao Fei or not, because that would also be an interesting thing. That because for anyone, this is not a spoiler, anyone who doesn't know, the Dao Fei have a connection to Kaioshi. So the fact that the Dai Li and the Dao Fei are fighting, it would be pretty interesting because of their connection to one of my favorite avatars. So I was interested in like whether it was, but it's not clear yet. It's not clear whether it is or not. So we'll see. We'll see who those guys are. Who are those guys on the bikes? That's the big question I have.
Yeah, I wanted to know more about them too, because they seemed kind of like Robin Hood types, right? Like, yeah. I don't think they were going to steal the tax money just so that they could keep it. I think that the people are being unfairly taxed by a queen who doesn't seem to care much about them.
Yep, I agree. And you know who is not an elite fighting force anymore? The White Lotus.
Oh my god.
They're so bad. Since book one. I mean,
Korra
has escaped.
Since book one, and I think I may have defended them, and I regret it. They just get constantly washed.
It's happening all the time. From letting the Avatar escape multiple times, not being able to protect them, not being able to keep prisoners in jail cells that are like notoriously like dangerous, to the point that Zuko even asked, how could you let this happen? Like, what is wrong with you? He says what we're all thinking.
Can we just also talk about their terrible communications?
Yeah.
Okay, so after Zaheer got out, mm-hmm. Don't you think all the other prisons should have been put on high alert?
I mean, but he locked them up so they couldn't notify anybody.
Yeah, but shouldn't they have been in communication with the rest of the White Lotus? At some point, there should be like a check-in, right?
There should be a system.
You missed roll call. So now there's a concern, right? Okay, I can forgive the first two jailbreaks. The third jailbreak is inexplicable. Yeah. Like, why did this happen? And you're telling me that Zuko literally has to get on the back of an ancient creature rather than using a radio? Or how about we go back old school and use a hawk to notify Eska and Desna?
Yeah.
This whole thing was wild to me. I was like, the White Lotus needs help. Iroh needs to come from the spirit world and reform his people, because these folks liberated the entire city of Ba Sing Se on their own.
Yeah.
Like 70 yeah. years ago with a bunch of elderly men.
I agree.
You're telling me that they're letting these new, lackadaisical, undertrained folks protect the Avatar and confine these prisoners? This is not, you know what? Reform the White Lotus.
Yeah, reform the White Lotus, abolish the Dai Li. These are movements. And, you know, we go out in our protests, we're going to be chanting these things, and somebody in Republic City is going to be like, get a job! You know what I mean? Like,
oh, could that somebody be Korra?
You're impressing yourself! It's wild to see her like sympathetic to the cause now, because she definitely rolled up in Republic City two seasons ago like, you're oppressing yourself. The Avatar's oppressing us. Somehow, the legacy of a very, very... a character who was a man of very few words. Somehow Sparky Sparky Boom Man's legacy lives on.
It really does. I'm excited about this. I'm glad to know that even though he took the L in the end, that his legacy will continue. Yeah. I am curious about this type of bending. How does it come about? Like, are you just born with these combustion powers? Like, I'm just curious about this.
It's very interesting. I'm interested too. And it's interesting that they put her in like the tundra of the north to keep her from being able to use the thing. And I mean, talk about a little adult content. When they're talking to her and they're all like, yeah, and she's like, oh, something's happened. He's out. I'm feeling warm already. I was like, dang, son, what's going on? Oh my gosh. It was good. This team that of the bad guys is really, really formidable. Like they're a little scary.
Yeah, no, they're terrifying, and they're very skilled benders. And you know, we don't know why they've been confined in this way. We don't know anything except that Zuko is shook, and that they're against the Avatar. So this, I think, the rollout of these villains is the best so far, because I'm scared for Korra, and I'm scared for everybody else. We don't know what their mission is yet, and we don't know what they did that had them be locked up. Like, I think that this is going to be an interesting thing to watch unfold.
I agree. And what I like about this the most is this is the first time that there's been, this is the first time since you had, even though they weren't on the same track, this is the first time since you had Azula, May and Ty Lee all together, that there's been a team, and those two of those people weren't benders. So this is the first bender team that have been the villains, the big bads, the antagonists, right? There's always been one. There's always been one person that has to be undone, and everyone's working against that one. So to have like a crew of people, it's really interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I totally agree. Do you want to just quickly share your headcanon about Zuko and the dragon? Because I'm fascinated.
Yeah. So it's like something that our friend Eva, shout out to Eva, who's a huge fan of Avatar, The Last Airbender. She and I were talking once, and we were talking about the episode with the Sun Warriors, and the episode where they're in, where, you know, they do the dance, and then there's an egg in the middle of a golden egg in the middle of that room, and then they get stuck with like all of the sap and everything to the top of the grill, like trying to get the egg, and then the Sun Warrior comes in. But before all that happens, Zuko grabs the egg and says, "It feels alive." And so she said to me once, "Man, I always have thought about it as that being his dragon, right? That being the dragon that was Zuko's when we see him in Korra." And I sat with that, and I was like, man, wouldn't that be a great story that he goes back there to that where that egg was, and actually that is his dragon? That would be absolutely amazing. So shout out to her, because she got my mind spinning, and I've adopted that as my headcanon.
I love it. I love that theory. Such a great episode. I mean, I think that's one of my favorite episodes of Avatar, so that would be great. But as I said, Avatar Studios, make it happen. Confirm.
Let's go.
Confirm.
Let's see that origin story.
We need to know.
100%.
So let's get into the teachings of the White Lotus, which is more the teachings of Andrea.
We've also kicked them and put them inside of a jail cell for this episode. All right.
So this week, one of the things that kind of emerged is, I don't know if I'd call this a theme, but it's certainly something that is worth thinking about, which is just the role of the Avatar. So, you know, Tenzin says this thing to Korra about her job is to bring balance to the world and not deal with the everyday problems of the citizens of Republic City. But what if the everyday problems of the people are part of the issue with the imbalance? Every Avatar has priorities of their own. I get it. Like, Aang defeated, after he defeated Ozai, he went on to work with Zuko to create the United Republic. And this certainly was an honorable quest. You know, as we noted when we covered the comics, the world would have fallen into deeper chaos without someone to help shepherd in this process of reconciliation. But it is quite disturbing to see how easily the Avatars, and I mean both Aang and Korra, have become comfortable with like just the regular poverty and human suffering around them. Korra is so focused on her goal to find airbenders and rebuilding a near extinct culture that she's ignoring, literally ignoring, the suffering of the people in Ba Sing Se, which is like right in front of her. So what is the role of the Avatar, and what does it mean to bring balance to the world? Is balance ensuring no one kingdom has power over the other, as the Fire Nation did in Avatar The Last Airbender? Does it mean bringing the spirit and physical worlds into harmony? Does it mean making the world more equitable for non-benders? Is this an unanswerable question? But I really just, I take exception with the amount of poverty that we've seen and how this is not, this doesn't become an issue that the Avatars ever really want to take on. Equity doesn't seem to be an issue if it's on a micro level. It seems to only be a macro issue for them.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, there's moments where it's addressed in, I think, the comics when they start talking about benders robbing, you know, because they were out of work, and I think, like, still they don't dig into, again, the systems that will help to alleviate these problems, at least at this point to this in the story. And you know, it's tough because Ba Sing Se has been like this since Aang was a little boy, and I wonder how it couldn't have been much better before that when he went into the iceberg. It just seems like it has been in a sustained state of, you know, like huge, like sprawl of like, it's a huge, huge city. It's a long, long way from everything else to get there. But it's just interesting how it seems like, you know, it's always been like the outer ring is poor, the middle ring is a little bit better, and the, you know, all of that has been very, very consistent. And I think like that nobody's ever tried to address it does seem a little bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, the show is trying to tell us something about the structure of society, but then it doesn't really get addressed directly, and it's not seen as like the big bad. But just seeing, listen, I was disgusted by the fruit that Bolin wanted to steal too, but that's the best fruit on the block, as their cousin told them. Mm-hmm. People in Ba Sing Se are eating those fruits and vegetables every day for sustenance, and it's just kind of like, this is just an accepted part of living in Ba Sing Se. And I have issues with this. Like, Korra is bothered by it, but she doesn't see it as part of her role to deal with it. Just like, and obviously Tenzin would agree because he just told her, okay, the vines issue, you can't solve that right now. Let's go do this bigger thing, which is to bring back the air nomads, which is a totally honorable goal. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with picking that as a priority. I have questions about why inequity is being highlighted but never really fully addressed. It's just kind of part of the tyrants of them being living in this like big city where there's propaganda and, you know, essentially a military police force, but it's not really addressed in any way. So it's a little frustrating. Like, what kind of responsibility does Korra have to bring balance when people are suffering like this?
I mean, does any Avatar? Because honestly, like, this has been this way. I mean, not as bad as this with the fruit, because we do have instances with like the Cabbage Man had built his cart up, and we know in Ba Sing Se there was like a tea house, and we know that there were different things. There was poverty, but it seems like it's progressed at this point, the way that it is. But this was happening, the Outer Ring was never really great. Like, I mean, even in the time of Kyoshi, it was not really great. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. that tells you a lot. Like the outer ring has been suffering for a long, long time. You know, so it's interesting. And it's, you know, there's like a weird thing around that. I think it's kind of puts on display, I mean, getting a little deeper than probably what they're trying to, I think, maybe address. You know, this concept of spirituality versus materialism, like, what does it mean to be, you know, to be so focused on the spiritual and let go of the material and in a way like that? I think like that's something that Tenzin is very much thinking about. He's like, don't worry about the squabbles because you got to focus on the spiritual dilemmas. And he's very spiritually minded. You know, they say you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good in like certain church circles and things like that. And then, you know, there's been teachers that have come that are here that say, you know, the poor will always be with you in like certain like spiritual texts. So like there's something to really think about when we're talking about like spirituality and this conflict between spirituality and material well-being and how the two kind of like work together. And I think that's kind of being addressed a little bit in this conflict. And I know that kind of what Korra did by opening the spirit portal has set a lot of things in motion. And one of them is, in my opinion, as we go further, is going to be partially this conflict you're talking about whether this elite kind of like approach is healthy for this world.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't think that Korra's responsibility is to reshape the entire world order, but I don't want to lay this blame at her. It just struck me that both she and Aang were so like immediately found comfort with the inequities in the city. And I know Aang was distracted, right? Because he was also, you know, he was distracted by the fact that he has to speak to the Earth King. His bison was missing. Like he yeah. just was go. But the acceptance of which like the inequity exists is just, it's something to think about.
No, I agree. I definitely agree. And I don't, you know, I will also not lay that Korra's feet and really not even Aang's. I think like this is something that you can see. You see way back from early Avatars all the way through. And I think like that, I think the question you asked in the beginning is really, really a poignant one, is like, what is the role of the Avatar to bring balance? Is it just spiritual? Is it spiritual and equality around how people are treated? You know, I could say more, but I won't spoil the Kyoshi novels. Read them. That's all I'll say. And that'll do it. That will do it for us this week. We really appreciate you guys. Go check us out, Kin Folklore Pod on Instagram, Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter. You can go ahead and join our Facebook group. Hit us up with any sort of emails you want at kinfolklore@gmail.com and leave some reviews on our podcast on anywhere you listen to podcasts. We appreciate you, and we'll see you again next week.
Thanks, everyone.